right up, ladies and gentlemen. We got CPUs, GPUs, audio codecs, video accelerators, baling wire, duct tape, and even Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry, brought to you by EEJournal.com. I'm Amelia Dalton, and yes, indeed, we have all of that and more, because this week we're talking about ramping up your memory game and getting better performance out of your electronic design at the same time. My guest, Greg Recupero from Performance IP, is here to reveal the details of Performance IP's Memory Request Optimizer, how Performance IP works with the EDA big dogs rather than working against them, and why reducing latency is the name of the game. Check it out. Hi, Greg. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Hi, Amelia.
So, Greg, give me the skinny on Performance IP. What are you guys about, and how did you get started?
Well, that's actually a very interesting story. So this is actually my second IP company. Back in the mid-90s, I co-founded View Automation, and that was really focused on standards-based IP, you know, USB, PCIe, things like that. But when the Performance IP opportunity presented itself, I was very excited about it because it allowed us to develop an IP company that actually had a technically compelling solution, something that wasn't standards-based. So it actually allows us to differentiate ourselves from the Synopsys and Cadences of the world, but still deliver IP that actually can augment the performance of your Cadence and Synopsys IP. So it was really allows us to differentiate us in the market and sets us apart from all of the other IP vendors.
So you guys recently introduced MRO, or Memory Request Optimizer, which is said to accelerate the performance of an electronic device. So how exactly does MRO go about doing that?
So the Memory Request Optimizer is entirely focused on reducing the latency you see to your memory subsystem. By reducing the average latency, it can improve the performance and basically keep, you know, your CPU or any of your other components. I mean, the systems that a lot of our IP goes into these days are very complex, heterogeneous systems. So you have your CPUs, you've got your GPUs, your video accelerators, audio codecs, all these components that you need to keep the data returning to them in a timely fashion, and actually at a higher bandwidth. The Request Optimizer, because it actually has the ability to analyze a client's request stream, determine which request it should optimize and which one it should not. And when it optimizes a request, it actually stores the data in its request optimization buffer, so it's available at a very low latency for the client. And you can actually dynamically tune the power performance profile that you need in your system. So it actually allows software, once the system is up and running, to actually set the power performance profile that it wants to operate at and then present either an enhanced user experience for the customer, or you can actually even run the system at a slower clock rate. For example, if you're getting a 10% or 20% performance improvement, you can actually run slower and still have the same performance as you would if you were running faster.
Okay, so can MRO save power as well?
So it can save power by allowing the customer to first run at a slower clock rate. So for example, if you're running at a gigahertz and we can actually get you an extra 10% performance boost, you can actually run at 900 megahertz and still have the same compute or performance profile that you would at a gigahertz. So that actually allows customers to run the design slower. Other customers are using us to actually be able to still use DDR3 and DDR4 solutions because we can actually improve or reduce the latency from those systems so they can actually run them at a slightly slower clock rate. And that can save you power at the entire system level too.
Okay, so let's circle back to those big IP vendors you mentioned earlier. How do you guys compete with the big dogs?
Well, you know, today, with the way the market is, you know, I don't know how a small IP company can actually compete against a Synopsys or a Cadence, because they have an entire IP portfolio and an entire complement of tools that they can offer to a customer. So how does a small IP company like Performance IP compete against that? You can't. So this is why we've actually been able to take the memory request optimizer, which is something that is not a standards-based product. I mean, it's a patented technology that we've developed, and it can be used to improve the performance of a Synopsys DDR controller or a Tensilica processor or an ARM processor. So it's actually a very synergetic relationship that Performance IP has with these type of vendors. So as opposed to being competitive, we actually see it as augmentative.
Okay, cool. That makes sense. All right, Greg, it's time for your off-the-cuff question. Now, I know you're from Boston, and you're a big Bruins fan. So what do their chances look like in this year's playoffs?
We're actually very excited that there's a good chance for the Bruins this year in the playoffs. I mean, after missing it for the last 2 years, they've got a new coach, and they've actually been playing very well. So this is the perfect time for them to peak. And with playoffs, the season's ending, I think, this weekend. So the playoffs are right around the corner. So we're real excited. Hopefully they can make a run like the Pats did.
Excellent. Well, I think that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me, Greg.
Thanks so much, Amelia, for having me.
So speaking of memory, in this week's news you may have missed, we're heading back to MIT once again. And we're not talking about electronic memory. No, the memory in your good old noggin. So, for the better part of several decades, neuroscientists have believed that memories are first formed in the hippocampus and then are slowly moved over to the neocortex for long-term storage in a process called consolidation. But new research at MIT is looking to change this theory almost completely. So, until now, neuroscientists based their knowledge of the creation and storage of memory based on what is called the standard model. But a new model developed at MIT called the multiple trace model claims that our memories are actually formed simultaneously in the hippocampus and that long-term storage location in the brain's cortex. This model also contends that semantic knowledge is actually stored way more swiftly than previously thought into areas of the neocortex, while episodic traces of the memories could still be found in the hippocampus for weeks, months, or even years. So these traces may store details of the memory, while the more general outlines are stored in the neocortex. According to this research, long-term memories actually remain silent in the neocortex for about 2 weeks before they reach a mature state. Okay, so how did this research come to be? So, this research was built on a 2012 study where scientists developed a process that allowed them to trace the circuits involved in memory storage and retrieval. In that study, this team of neuroscientists actually developed a way to label cells called engram cells, which contain specific memories. It also allowed them to artificially reactivate memories by using optogenetics, a technique that can turn target cells on and off using light. Unfortunately, these researchers at MIT have only been able to monitor these engram cells for about 2 weeks, but they are working on adapting their technology to work for a longer period. A couple of the biggest questions that they are looking to solve now is whether memories fade completely from the hippocampal cells, or if some traces remain, and how the prefrontal cortex engram maturation process occurs. So, in the wake of the current explosion in neural networks for AI, research like this project coming out of MIT seems to be the next perfect step for Skynet. I mean, never mind. If you want any further information about this super cool memory formation research, including the details on how this team at MIT developed this model from a fear conditioning event in mice, Yeah. I've included a link below the player on this week's fish frying page on eejournal.com. So maybe in your next design, in addition to that memory optimization, you're probably going to need some dynamic comparators to get all that analog to digital design exactly right. But getting those dynamic comparators to do what you want, well, it's all about noise. And as we all know, noise is definitely one of the most difficult things to analyze in your tool environment. In a recent episode of Chalk Talk, we tackle this very issue. In Keeping Things Quiet, a new methodology for dynamic range comparator noise analysis, I sit down with Art Schaldenbrand from Cadence Design Systems and chat all about noise analysis in dynamic comparators. It will help your next design rise above all that noise out there. You can check out this episode of Chalk Talk by heading on over to YouTube, keyword EE Journal. You can also click the link below the player on this week's fish frying page, or you can also check out the on-demand section of eejournal.com. Hey, have you checked out EE Journal on social media yet? Well, you should. You can find us at facebook.com/eejournal. If you're into Twitter, you can monitor our tweets at eejournaltfm. And hey, if LinkedIn is more your thing, well, you can follow us on LinkedIn as well. And we have that YouTube channel I mentioned earlier, keyword eejournal. It is chock full of all kinds of techie videos, including our very popular Chalk Talk webcast series. And you can subscribe to our EE Journal YouTube channel as well. I'm just saying. By clicking the links below the player on this week's fish frying page, you can also grab our fish frying RSS feed or subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, just head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's fish frying page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or even the best geeky hotspot in your city, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of April 14th, 2017, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.